Hey folks, welcome to episode 3 of the Brief Encounter podcast with me, Johnny Boyle. I've just had a filling about 2 hours ago, so half of my face is numb, so I'll do my best to get through this. On this episode, I will be talking to Fair City actor Jim Bartley, who's played Bella Doyle for over 30 years. Jim grew up in Drimnagh in the 40s and made his acting debut at the age of 13 in 1958 alongside Larry Gogan and Gay Byrne in the remarkable Mr. Pennypacker at the Olympia Theatre. To think that Laurel and Hardy had just played there 5 years previously, I think is pretty amazing. He moved into musicals such as The Sound of Music, Jesus Christ Superstar, and worked in Mosney and Butlins, where he received some training there, and also at the Pike Theatre. He went on to act in plays such as Frankie and Johnny, The Dumb Waiter, Marble Madonna, As You Like It. And he revealed to me recently that in the 80s, he did a version of Extremities with our very young Twink. He made his TV debut in 1964 in Tolka Row, playing the character Sean Nolan, which ran until 1968, where he acted alongside Brenda Fricker. He went on to have success in show bands under the name Sean Nolan and The Raindrops, and proceeded to do more TV work in Z-Cars with the great Milo O'Shea and David O'Kelly, and actresses such as Fionnuala Flanagan. He had small parts in Coronation Street, The Irish RM, The Bill, and acted in movies such as The Pink Panther Strikes Again, War of the Buttons, and Taffin, with our very own James Bond, Mr. Pierce Brosnan. Later in life, he went on and was offered the part as Bella Doyle, which he starred in for over 30 years. And he's had a career that spanned over 7 decades. So we've talked about a lot of highs that Jim's had and some of the lows. It's a great conversation we had. We actually spoke for 2 hours and had a few pints of Guinness. So I'm going to split this episode into 2 episodes. So this one will be an hour long, and I'll release the second one in about 2 weeks' time. So I hope you enjoy it. Episode 1 with Dave Brown from Picture House is still available. Episode 2 with Irish drum legend Graham Hopkins is also available. I've had some great feedback, and I'm reaching almost 1,000 downloads, which I'm delighted about. So you can find me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Please like and subscribe, and you can email me at briefencounterpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any feedback, I'd really appreciate it. So here we go. Take it away, boys.
Long time coming, yeah.
So we were talking about Meg Ryan and Melanie Griffith. Jessica Lange, now there's somebody who I thought was
she's just about my age, would she?
She would be now, yeah.
She would be what, 70 odd,
yeah,
80.
Yeah. Yeah. And our first movie was
she in Driving Miss Daisy or no? With Morgan Freeman. It wasn't her, was it?
I don't know. Well, I just know it was Morgan Freeman and Jessica Tandy.
Jessica Tandy. Oh, I'm totally confused.
Yeah.
Well, it's not at my age anyway, you know.
Well, because Jessica Lange's first big break was the remake of King Kong, which she made with Jeff Bridges.
I saw the original. Yeah, I remember that only too well. It was great. Big black and white and the gorilla and God, the tears at the end.
Yeah, it was
you
great.
You know, the big vulnerable, big, you know, ape on the top of the...
Building?
It's the highest building in New York at the time. Empire State Building,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That was it. That was long ago, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Like movies, like my father was up, Lawrence of Arabia was his big movie growing up as a kid, you know? And he was like, what kind of films really resonated with you as a young man?
Well, I'm not sure. I remember one of the first movies I ever saw, which was on the screen at school in Colossia, in Parallel Square. And it was Captain Horatio Hornblower. And I think that Gregory Peck played Captain Horatio Hornblower. And it was a colour movie, and it was about, you know, I mean, it was what, 18th century. It would have been, you know,
yeah, 18th, yeah.
Between the 18th century and going into the Yeah, around about the 1800s and that. Yeah, but that was movies. We didn't get to see an awful lot of movies.
No, really.
Well, we were from Drimna, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And we really couldn't afford. I think I was about, maybe I moved up to Walkinstown after Drimna. No, Crumlin, St. Mary's Drive. And we used to go to the Star Cinema.
Where was that now?
Down there, just opposite the Children's Hospital.
Right.
On the Drimna Road there.
Did that become a roller disco?
It did, and it became a bowling alley.
That's right, yeah.
And that was where we had two in a seat on the Saturday afternoon matinee,
yeah,
right? And there was sixpence in, right? And you're charged sixpence, even though there's two in the seat, but it's sixpence a seat. But they, you know?
Yeah.
And they raked it off us, or young innocents, right? And there was a young tomboy of a girl called Doreen Kennedy. She was mad as a brush, right? And she always wanted to sit beside me in the two in the seat, you know? And I didn't even get the message then, you know? You know? I still be watching the folly and upper of Superman escaping from last week. And then the shells would close, and then the 20th Century Fox would come on, and the whole cinema would roar, shouting, yeah! And then the big movie was on.
Yeah.
And that was it. But she used to bet me on the head and the whole lot, right? She'd be, well, you know, during the movie, you know, she really told me. She was great fun, though.
Yeah.
That was, yeah.
They used to show, like, the serials, so you'd have, because I remember Flash Gordon, the old Flash, did the show? The old Flash Gordons.
Yeah, I remember him as well, yeah. These were antiquated. I mean, I think all the aliens were made of cardboard boxes, like, things sticking out of their heads,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we thought, but, you know. No, that goes back, but I'm going to go back to Drimna.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, we were growing up there, and I think I was born in 1945 in Drimna, Galtymore Close.
Oh, yeah.
And this was sprawling Drimna council houses, right? And they're grey. They're all grey, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I never saw outside of that until I think eventually when I moved up to St. Mary's Drive. But Drimna, it was amazing. It was huge. And all the roads in Drimna are all named after mountain ranges and mountains.
Yeah.
As in Galtymore
Road.
Road. Brandon Road, you know.
Yeah.
Ben Bulben.
Yeah.
All the way. And the one thing, as I grew older and got familiar with the local pubs, which there were really none in Drimna.
Yeah.
Except on the Drimna Road, you have Val Hatton's and that.
Would the submarine have been around? The submarine
The submarine was up in Crumlin. That was up the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't even there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This was, I'm talking about 1950.
Yeah.
And there wasn't one pub between the Crumlin Road and the canal. They had, I think it's the Arches now on the canal. And then there's the Gate Bar on the Crumlin Road.
Yeah.
I don't know if they built any there since, but I doubt it because there wasn't an awful lot of room. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a huge, sprawling Drimna estate, right? Amazing. Yeah. And I don't know, I thought, because a few actors came from the same area. There was a famous actor, a classic actor years ago in Dublin, called Paddy Bedford.
Yeah.
And he had, he'd most of his work in the Gate Theatre. And his mentors were Michael McLeanmore and Hilton Edwards. And he was very well known. And another, I always thought, Emmett Bergen.
Yeah.
From
Glenroe, is it?
From, the name won't come to me. What's his name?
Emmett Bergen, he was in Glenroe, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in Glenroe.
Brother Patrick Bergen, yeah.
I can't think of the name. It'll come to me later on. And his brother Patrick Bergen. And I always thought Gabriel Byrne came from Drimna.
Yeah.
But I was checking it up. He says in his, I Googled information and he said, no, he came from Walkinstown, but I remember he mentioned me in his book. I think it was Pictures in the Attic or Images of My Mind or something like that.
Yeah.
But a girl said, showed me the book one day and she said, I remember years ago when I was walking along and Jimmy Barclay, right, who was on television at the time, right, and there were two women as I passed them by and they were looking at him and they said, I wouldn't mind a slice of that, you know. And he says, I didn't know what they meant at the time, you know. I said, don't worry, Gabriel, I wouldn't know what they meant either. It's only a young fella, you know. That was it. But anyway, and it's very funny. I only met Gabriel probably about twice in my whole life.
Yeah.
We were supposed to do a play about some German concentration camp. Fred Haynes, I think, was the name of the director who wanted us to work together. It never worked. And I mean, it never happened.
Yeah.
And so, but that was it. But anyway, I think if he's from Walkinstown, he's from Walkinstown. But I don't know, because I lived in Walkinstown there, because they changed the parish from Crumlin Parish to Walkinstown Parish.
Right.
Why they did that, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are just crazy Irish sort of maneuvers that they do, right?
Yeah.
And we haven't a clue why they did them, you know. So that was it. Yeah, Drivna.
That's mad.
Where were we before this?
Well, we were talking about our favourite actresses, but my father grew up in Dowland Road in Crumlin. And my grandfather was a guard in Crumlin Garda Station, and he would have helped set up the boxing club back then. There was a boxing club set up probably in the mid-50s. I don't know if you remember
that. It was Dowland Road in Walkinstown.
Dowland Road was...
I was in Crumlin, off Balfe Road.
It was between the submarine and the Walkinstown roundabout. That's right. So they lived there until he retired, and then they moved out to Hoth Lighthouse, where he was the lighthouse keeper there all through the 70s, 60s and 70s, you know.
Was he sort of isolated, or was it on land?
He was in Hoth, in the harbour. He wasn't. And I think my father worked in the submarine bar as a lounge boy in the day. Yeah. So, you know. But you went to school in Weaver Street?
Weaver Square.
In the Liberties?
Weaver Square in the Liberties, yeah. And I remember going to it, and I remember the first day, and it was your first day of school. There was no play schools or creches in those days, you know?
Yeah.
No play school. So you didn't get used to going in to play with kids, and that you were just all of a sudden brought to this place, and your mother was letting you go.
Yeah.
And even with the gate where we went into was like a prison door, with the little bars right on them.
Yeah.
And it was grey.
Yeah.
And I went through it, and then there was a green tiled corridor up to the classrooms, right? And next to me, mother's letting me go, right?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't go, right? But then I went, and then Miss Moriarty, a teacher, was inside, and I started to look very dubious, right? And then I put my legs up against the sashes of the door, and I started to scream, right? Ah, screamed and screamed and screamed on. I wouldn't let go. And eventually Miss Moriarty held up a threepenny bar of chocolate, little skinny bar of chocolate, and she held it up across the way in the classroom. That's when I realised I could be bribed, and I was a chocolate addict. I did like a light across with that chocolate bar. But the day after that, now this school is right beside the abattoir, Donnelly's.
Donnelly's Abattoir.
Donnelly's
okay.
Abattoir,
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
It was just the other side of Dunord Avenue.
Yeah.
And my mother says, the next day, the screaming, I started the screaming again, I went in, but she said she could hear me above the pigs being slaughtered in Donnelly's on the way home. And it was the first school. It's the first place I ever experienced pain from another person. And it was a nun.
Okay.
With this bamboo cane, right?
Right.
And what are you? You're 5, 6 years of age, you know.
Yeah.
What crime have you committed? What have you done, right? And she takes out this bamboo cane and slashes me on the fingers, right? And I said, I never forget that. I don't want to mention her name because, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't be fair. She'd be dead and gone by now, well, truly. But that was it. And there was another teacher in the sort of first class. You went from low babies, high babies, first class.
Yeah.
And she had this flat wooden stick, right, which was about a yard long.
Yeah.
And she was very fond of using that. And we're only 7 years of age now, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some people said the nuns were worse than the Christian Brothers.
I didn't spend enough time with the nuns to really find out.
Yeah.
But I found out about the Christian Brothers, and it wasn't them all. There were always a couple in each school, right?
Yeah.
Who were inclined in the paedophilic, right?
Yeah.
Paedophile attitude, and the others in a total sadistic thing, right?
Yeah.
Who love beating the shit out of you. And this leather that came in, right? That was also nearly a yard long. And they used to put a 2.5 shilling sewn into the end of it to make it heavier, to give you a wallop of it. And they weren't short of abuse, right?
Mm.
Sexual abuse. And they'd keep you in school after to read the story, and they'd start groping you while you were reading the story. But we didn't know at the time. We didn't know, you know, we thought, this is, you know, yeah, right, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we'd all be laughing at them when we got out, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not as if some of them were really badly, badly affected by, and I went a step further with some of them.
Yeah.
And some of them were really, I knew a friend of mine, I kept seeing him years after, but he was still suffering from it. And they were taken out private and brought into the rooms, you know. And there was, we used to, you come out, we think, you know, we used to call them Browns, you know.
Yeah.
That brownie, you know, we, you know. And we, it didn't affect.
Yeah.
Went on, but there were some that was happened to lads, right, and they suffered bad, you know.
I'd say they did.
Yeah.
I'd say they did. Yeah, yeah. I went to school in the 80s now, and I was only taught by priests in secondary school. And I could see a few of them took pleasure from inflicting pain on of the students.
Oh, yeah.
Now, not to the excess of some of the Christian brothers, yeah. but, you know, the clatter of the back of a duster or their knuckles in the head or something like that, you know.
Well, we had some of that knuckle, the chalk remover, you know, the duster.
Yeah, the duster,
the
back
of the knuckles and all that. And the fella used to pinch away the side locks, right? And we didn't mind that. That was, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't right.
I tell you,
but we put up with an awful lot of it when we were that age. And if you went home and complained, right, you'll be told, you must have done something to deserve it. You know,
So
you didn't complain when you got home, and that's the problem. And it grew and grew and grew.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a teacher lifted me by the throat once up the wall. Lifted me up the wall.
I
was only, I would have been about 8 or 9 years of age. I'll never forget it. Never forget it. But, yeah. Anyway, so, Clastawurra.
I enjoyed it, actually. I enjoyed the football. I played Gaelic for Clastawurra. I won a medal. Yeah, a Dublin College's medal. And I played fullback in my last year. I remember playing in Larkin O'Toole Park.
Larkin O'Toole, I used to live beside there.
I used to play there.
Shapers.
And I enjoyed the Gaelic, right? And the hurling, I mean, I could have hurled as well, but we didn't, because it's funny thing about it. They put the good guys, the physical athletes, into the Gaelic team.
Yeah.
And they put the weaker sort of fellas on the hurling and gave them a hurling and sent them out to play, right? And we know now that hurling, right, that demands the fitness and the skill, right? But it wasn't, the Gaelic football was the thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, because I never remember a Clastawurra hurling team playing anywhere. We always went to see the seniors playing football. I remember some of their names as well. It was, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Eamon O'Carroll. I remember him. He was a fine, right? And there's a little guy called Snitchy as well, you know. There was, the lads. Now, they were only sort of 17, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would have been 13 looking at the 17-year-olds.
They're
big fellas in school, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they hadn't even got up to the leaving yet, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but they seemed to be bigger and older. I mean, they'd be nearly getting married when they left, you know.
Yeah. And did you play sport all through secondary school then?
I played sport all through secondary school. And then when I left, I played for, there was a club, Clown Clastawurra. I played for them for a couple of years after that. But then I went and we formed a local soccer team back up in St. Mary's in Crumlin, just off the Drimley Road there. St. Mary's United, all the local lads, right? And we had a good little team in St. Mary's United, right?
Yeah.
And I was only talking the other day, somebody stopped me in the pub just downstairs from us here. By the way, we're upstairs in the lounge. Upstairs in the lounge. Anybody listening to this, we're upstairs in the lounge having two nice pints of Guinness, right? And then Johnny's buying, by the way, which might be a miracle to some people.
Absolutely.
Now somebody talked to me, they remember Tony Mooney. I said, Tony Mooney on the Drimley Road, he was one of the best left fulls I've ever seen, right? Playing. And we had this great little team. But it was a funny thing about the team. There were certain brothers, I don't want to mention their names, it could be taken up for libel or whatever. What do you get if you're on the radio saying something bad about somebody? But they're well-known brothers, and one went on to be a League of Ireland player. And but he used to want to play for us, and he brought his brother to play for us. And we noticed when we were playing, they'd play for him. One of them would get injured and go off, right? You know?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, we'd all go in and we found that our pockets had been done in the dressing room. And so we realised, we're onto this one, right? So the next time, one of them got injured, right? I think it was Tony Mooney and Tony. He said, "Tony, you have to get injured. The minute one of them gets injured, you're getting injured." He goes, "Why? Because you have to go over to the dressing room."
That's gas.
I enjoyed. It's the game I played most of my life, soccer.
I never
got a medal for it.
Never
got a medal. I remember the manager was my best friend, and we got to the final of the some cup, right? Played in Talca Park at the time, and I couldn't play in the semi final. The Matt O'Leary Trophy. That was the I couldn't play in the semi-final. I was working on Talca Row at the time, on television. In case anybody doesn't remember Talca Row, this is around about 1964. If there's anybody alive still listening to me. And he dropped me and he put on the second team keeper, right? I was furious. And I'm sitting there. And why'd you be? He had a great game in the semi-final. I'm the first team keeper. What are you doing? You're supposed to keep your first team. He goes, no, he didn't. Then your man let in a goal, right? I said, I'd have stopped that, you know? I'd have stopped that, right? And I couldn't say it. I wasn't going to start whinging, right? And I was effing. I was going to say the full word, wasn't it? I was really, really furious, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, it went on. And years later, God forbid, he died. He's my best friend.
Yeah.
Right? And he died a number of years ago. And at the funeral, Ray Tracy, our international, got up to pay the homily, right, to him. And he looked down at me, and we lost, actually, the final, right? We lost 1-0.
Okay.
St. Kevin's boys beat us. And Ray Tracy looked down from the altar, and he says, "By the way, Jim, if it's any solace to you," he said, "Tom told me before he died that he was sorry he didn't play in the final." The whole church, you know. Anyway, I never won it. Never won a medal.
But you did a bit of coaching.
The under-16 in Knocklyon.
It wasn't
so much coaching. You're sort of semi-system manager and that, right?
Right.
But they're at an awkward age. They're 16 and they're smelling themselves, you know.
Testosterone's gone.
They want to kill everybody on the other side. Yeah. I said, no, I can't do this anymore, no.
Yeah.
I couldn't. Yeah. I wasn't made for this at all, no. I know, but I enjoyed it. I mean, there were some good lads. Good lads on
that
the
was Knocklyon United.
Knocklyon United.
Do you remember Johnny Bates and John Mallon?
I do. Poor Johnny left us there.
He did. He died of cancer a few years ago. But do you remember John Mallon? John Mallon.
I probably do.
Because he was one of the originators of Knocklyon United, and he lives in England now. And they lived in my estate in Glenmara. And he came back there recently, and he went to visit the clubhouse, and he says there isn't even a picture of him up there. And it was himself and Johnny. He was very disappointed. But I remember Johnny Bates, all right. I used to knock around with his kids, you know, at school with some of them, you know.
Yeah, we tend to forget these things. We lack being able to pay tribute to somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody doesn't want to do it. They don't have the time to do it. We don't have a photograph. You know what I mean?
We're very
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I have a friend of mine during last year. I don't know when you're going out with this, Johnny, but Tom Jordan, who was my best mate in Fair City.
Yeah.
And a lovely photograph of the two of us years ago, probably in my first 5 years in Fair City. Two of us toasting to the camera with two pints of Guinness. Just the two of us. And we became great mates for 30 years, right? And I'm one of the lads in RTE saw the photo and he sent me out these stills of it, right? Of the two of us. And I said, and he understood, I said, any chance? And he said, no problem. And it's nice when somebody makes the effort to do something like that.
Sure.
Some people find that's too much of an effort. You know?
Sure.
I mean, to Johnny Mallon, I mean, they must have.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just looking through some photographs of you online earlier today and I saw that photograph of the two of you sitting at the bar toasting the pint. Yeah.
It's a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And at what point? So when you were in Cloisterweire, you said something to me a long time ago where you said it's not that you wanted to act, you had to.
Well, it's not, but at that age I mean, I was, what, before Colostomy, I was, well, I was in Colostomy, but I went to a drama school because I was in the school plays in Colostomy.
Yeah.
Oscar Aylgit, right? And because it was an all-Irish school, and I'll tell you more about that later on, so do it with my father. Anyway, they cast me in the school plays, right? And that. Tomás McConaughey, who was artistic director of the Abbey Theatre, and he used to come in and direct the pageants and direct the plays and the Passion Play at Easter and the Irish pageant to celebrate certain risings and that in Irish history. And he said, you should think about, because I had been to Eileen V. Hayes School in Father Matthew Hall in Church Street. And then she entered me for the Fetches, right, solo pieces. And I was entered in the under 14, or I think I was, and I was 12 at the time. So I did this solo piece from the Bishop's Candlesticks, a prisoner just escaping from and on the run. And he breaks into the bishop's house and he's going to steal the candlesticks. But he finds bread on the table and he starts eating it. And the bishop is asking questions. But when you're doing the solo piece, there's actually no bishop there. So you're sort of answering and giving it. And I remember I won the gold medal.
Yeah.
And they were given out to me. And they weren't given out to me. But some of the mothers and that were given out. He was too young. He shouldn't have been in this, you know. I remember my mother told me, I didn't hear about this. But anyway, it was funny because come some celebration in the house, my mother asked me, would I do the Bishop Candlesticks thing? And I said, yeah, I'll do it. So I did. So I got up to the place where he sees the bread on the table. But there was no bread on the table here. There was cake, right?
Yeah.
And you know, manners that tell me you're not to go for that cake unless you ask, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, in the middle of the drama, he said, and I'm hungry, and I see that in front of me, and I need it. And ma'am, can I take the cake?
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Going back to Colostomy and all Irish, my father was, he was a rampant sort of provo, armchair provo.
Right.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't go on his holidays to England, really.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He went to Wales because it didn't seem so sort of Anglo, right? In Wales, we had Welsh cousins and that.
Yeah.
So we go over to Wales. But because we were staying with our uncles and aunties over there, so we weren't staying in hotels or anything. Yeah. He hated giving England the, you know, any Irish money. No, he didn't, wouldn't do that. But he said, and he sent us all to Irish schools, and he'd always call me Seamus, right? Never Jimmy, or, you know, he'd only call me Jimmy, Seamus. But as I grew up, I noticed that my mother was the son of a Dublin Fusilier, a Royal Dublin Fusilier in the British Army and fought in the First World War.
Right.
At Ypres, right? And survived it and came back. And of course, this was just after Victorian years and that, right?
Right.
And there was the Union flag wrapped around an obelisk, right? And there was the Royal Coach, right?
Yeah.
And there'd be a picture of Queen Victoria and that in the... This was all liberties in Dublin. This was, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This was very just... and it would have been pre-sort of 1916 and all that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my mother was born in John Street in Pimlico. And all this paraphernalia was around the house. And I go in and I see all this, right? And I used to think, how did me dad come into this house with the tricolour wrapped around him, you know? And here, and I asked him one day, as I grew older, I said, I have to ask you this. I said, Dad, says, Sha Seamus, yes, yeah. I said, down in 21 John Street, when you were courting me mother, you know, I said, I always, how did you manage to go into that house calling for and all this royalty and Union flags and all that inside and the Royal Coaches? How did you do that? And he says, ah, well, you see, Seamus, you know, your mother was very beautiful. I said, love is blind? Yeah.
Was he a dub? Was your dad a dub?
I was a dub, yeah.
Yeah.
He was from the north side, Inishfallon Parade, I think it was, yeah.
Right.
And not too far from Croke Park, yeah.
And did he work in Jacobs? Was that right?
He worked in Jacobs. He was foreman plumber in Jacobs. And then he was leaving Jacobs and he applied for teaching and lecturers position in Bolton Street, Taylor's Hall. Yeah. He did the Guildhall exams out of London, and he did them at home.
Yeah.
But he got the exams and everything. He qualified as a lecturer teacher and went to teach and lecture in Bolton Street, right? And today he is more famous than I am. I mean, quite not.
Really?
Well, I'm only famous on a sort of national scale, to be honest, right? But I'm going out and say, are you Jimmy Bartley's son? your dad taught me. He was great. And every couple of years and every year I'd hear somebody, you Jimmy Bartley's son. And I say, he would have been very proud of that, yeah.
Wow.
You Jimmy Bartley's son. He was a plumber, wasn't he? Your dad was the best plumber who ever taught me in my life. That's why only one person taught him in his life, but you know. But yeah, he started off talking about a washer and where the washer came from and why it came. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He said the washer, I put a washer. But he knew the history of every little link and thing in plumbing, right? Yeah, I was very proud of him, yeah.
And how did your parents feel about you moving into, like, the acting game?
Yeah, my mother loved that, yeah. My mother loved it, yeah, because when I was doing that, she sent me to drama when she saw me doing the school plays, and I went to drama, and I did them. And then it was while I was in that drama school in Father Matcher there, I auditioned for the Olympia in 1958.
Yeah.
And I was 12 when I got the part. I was 13 in the middle of the show. So I went in and I don't remember doing the audition. I just got the part.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And there was another lad, we were twins, a lad called Damien Bourne, and myself, we played twins. And like you say in the thing there, Gay Byrne and Larry Gogan.
Gay Byrne and Larry Gogan.
Now, I did, you know, I just knew them.
Yeah.
Gay Byrne, right?
But I had no idea they were, stage.
Larry Gogan was only 20 or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I think Gay Byrne was only 19 or something like that, you know? But no, that was very, the importance of it didn't really dawn on me. I mean, at 13, you know, you're going off to a play, you love doing it, go in, right, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it. But it wasn't until later on that, right, you saw Larry coming to the front and you saw Gay coming along.
Yeah.
And, that was the first one.
1958.
Yeah, I remember they were going to, I celebrated my 13th birthday in it. And they knew it was one of the twins had a birthday, right, because we played twins.
Yeah.
They were giving my box of chocolates to Damien, who played the other twin, right, and it was my birthday. I'd go, excuse me, it's my birthday. Because if they'd taken the photograph, they would have taken a photograph of him being presented with the box of chocolates.
Yeah.
And I was beginning to realise, you know, what the press and photographs meant, you know. On occasion, I said, I'll be in this business, yeah. Like, that was it, yeah.
But to think 5 years before that, Laurel and Hardy were on that stage.
I didn't even know it at the time.
You know. There was a woman that worked in the Olympia for years. She was 16, I think, and when Laurel and Hardy played there. She only retired a couple of years ago. She worked in the Olympia Theatre for over 50 years. I think her name might have been Maureen. Maureen. Maureen.
Knew Maureen well.
Yeah.
Maureen. God, yeah. I was like one of her sons or a nephew coming in to see Maureen.
That's gas.
So I loved going to Maureen, yeah. She was the queen of the Olympia, yeah.
Wow.
Maureen's bar after her there.
That's right, they named the bar after her, yeah.
Oh, lovely. She's still there.
I think she retired a couple of years ago, but she was there because I would have played there a few times, and I remember she was there.
Maureen was great.
She was lovely
lady. Yeah.
So, like, I suppose 1958, 13. So how could you juggle school and doing plays in the evening and all?
Well, I juggled them all right, but I failed me primary.
Right.
The one you do. I think they call it the 11 plus over in England. Right.
Right. Okay.
It's the one you do when you're about 10 or 11. Because when that was the year, I think I was doing the Olympia and all that, and going to drama school, and so I failed it. And I didn't tell my mother. I told my granny.
Yeah.
You know, because you the granny, you tell the granny everything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was in Pimlico that when I told the granny, I wrote it down in the diary.
Yeah.
I said, told granny I failed the primary. And it was 2 years later, my mother, and she read me diary, the cheek of her. You know? I said, you tell your daddy, your granny, your father, primary. Yeah. I said, why didn't you tell me? I'm afraid. Anyway, I went on. And I passed the inter, as we call it, the junior cert, but yeah. the inter cert, I only passed that because I got the bonus points in Irish, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't a great...
academic.
Academics, yeah. No, I wasn't very good. I loved languages. I loved French. I loved English. I loved Shakespeare. I loved art, right?
Yeah.
I loved the sport. I was no good at maths or arithmetic or anything like that until I started playing snooker and darts, you know. Being able to mark the doors, mark the board.
Yeah.
And snooker as well, and looking for how much you make the 1-4 set.
Were you any good at snooker? What was your highest break?
Yeah, it wasn't. My highest break is 48.
That's not bad.
It's 48. Now, I haven't played because I've got cataract on one eye, and so the eyes, disimproved. And you see, your 20/20 vision, you know.
Yeah.
Because you really can't tell. Because when I go out to use the rest, right, I'd have to put the cue on the rest, then I'd have to go down to the end of the queue to see if it was near enough to the ball. I'd play the shot.
God.
I love the snooker. At 48, remember I played against an actor, a colleague friend of mine, who gave the business up, Frank Melia. We were down in Cork. I was in the Victoria snooker saloon in Cork.
Yeah.
On the Panna, as they call it, on the Panna in Patrick Street. That's where I scored the 48. And darts, I have very proud that I actually scored 180.
You got 180.
I got 180. Before the Temple Bar is what it is now, the Temple Bar area.
Yeah.
There was a little pub called the Temple Bar.
Yeah. Still there.
The busman, you've been there. The busman, this is the old one. And the busman, and there'd be card games, 25, there'd be dominoes going on, and there'd be the darts going on, right? And I used to go in, if I was rehearsing in the project, where it was then, then I'd be into the Temple Bar.
Yeah.
And I knew the owner, and I can't remember his name, I'm ashamed. But he was a lovely man. And the locals, he'd come off on a break, and the lads out there, they'd go in and run the bar, they'd go in and take a pint and just note down. You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely. I mean, this is Dublin, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Before the invasion of Temple Bar. Right?
I know.
Now, I don't mind it being Temple Bar, but have respect. I mean, look at France. They can do all this right in the areas without puking up on the streets and pissing out there and loud music and all that. Like I said, sometimes we just don't know how to behave.
Yeah.
You know, like we covered this earlier, though.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how to behave towards each other, you know.
Yeah.
But that was it. But this was a lovely little pub, right? And it was great. And no hassle. And I scored. I remember I scored the 100, called 180. I went, oh, Jesus. I nearly forgot to go up and take my darts out of the board. I got out celebrating, you know. And I took them out, and then they came up the next game, right? And my next throw, right? I couldn't hit the board. I got about 26.
I love playing. I played snooker all through my teens, all through my 20s. Yeah. I think my highest break was somewhere in the 30s. I got lucky one day. Oh. We used to play in the Aristocrat Club in Clanbrassil Street. Do you remember that? Where the new inn was?
No.
On the way to St. Patrick's Cathedral there. No. It was on the left. But I remember at the Spawell in Temple Oak. I don't know if they still have the snooker tables.
I'm sure they do. Yeah, I'm not sure, but they have. They still have the golf range or the driving range. I'm sure. But I used to play snooker in the Spawell.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
You're down there of an afternoon.
I remember one year they had the father-son competition, and myself and my father, they drew our name out of the hat, and do you know who we were up against? Ray McAnally and Angus McAnally.
Ah, go on.
And I know Angus McAnally's a good snooker player.
There's two show-offs I played Ray.
Yeah, did you?
I played Ray just a couple of months before he died.
Really?
I think the fact that I nearly beat him gave me a terrible shock. You know, I could see his face.
Yeah.
I'm on the verge of beating him, and he's getting very, very... And I talked to Angus later. He says, he was very worried that he was going to... He's a little whippersnapper, Jim Pertley, got to be. Because we'd been in the movie Taffin.
Taffin,
because he was in that.
Yeah.
And I remember the Ray. And I worked with him in The Sound of Music as well.
Oh.
He played Captain Von Trapp. And he was great. You know, he he could go on a bit too much for some people.
Yeah.
But he was a pro, thorough pro, great actor, lovely. I got on great with him, right, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And Angus, you know, I've known Angus since he was born.
He's a lovely man.
Yeah. Yeah, the snooker I loved, and the darts I loved as well. But this is all hand coordination. Unfortunately, at the moment, I'd love to play a game of snooker, but the legs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got peripheral neuropathy, and anybody listening will know what that is, the numbness of the nerve ends to the feet, right? Which affects your confidence in your balance. So that's, I mean, it's not the worst in the world, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's not the worst in the world, but I do use the disability sign for parking, you know?
Oh, that's handy.
And there's one downstairs outside. Yeah. Yeah. I'm always disgusted when somebody's in there before me, right? You know, they always say to Helen, you go and check to see how they have a card, or, you know?
No, but
sometimes it's the park there, and somebody a bit older than myself will be coming down, right, and walking us slowly, and they mightn't have a card. So, look, you know. That's what, but when somebody uses, you know, and I've seen them outside the local chemist, and they come in, they park in it, right?
Yeah.
And they're as right as rain jumping out.
Yeah. No, that's not cool.
It's not good. No. This is a bit, you know. I hate that. I just hate it, you know.
Yeah.
There's no thought. That's it. We're going back to no thought.
I think the human race is kind of, it's not, you know, we're turning into something that's not great. I mean, I think
we're not all, thank God, you know.
But it's like anything, you know. You could just have to put one arsehole in a room, and they can spoil it for everybody. I go to gigs, and it's
look at the two extents of the Atlantic Ocean, from one White House over to another Parliament building, right?
Yeah,
and you've got that.
Yeah,
pardon me, with a load of crap between the two of them, and I love, you know, Well, we don't know what the future's going to bring. You know?
No, well, we've no control. No. Well, the future's anxiety and the past is depression, you know?
Yeah.
What about, like, we were talking about Ray McAnally, because, like, when I was growing up as a kid, you know, I read things like Strumpet City, and I remember seeing, like, someone like Cyril Cusack and that, and Ray McAnally was in The Mission, and I know you were in June on the Paycock. I saw Donald McCann play Captain Boyle. And I saw Michael Gambon and John Kavanagh.
Yeah.
I know you've been in some movies. Were you in The Fantasist with John?
I was in The Fantasist, That was the one I had to... And horse riding was another thing of mine, right? And I was in The Fantasist, and I had to ride... The character I played had to ride a horse across the fields, right?
Yeah.
And they asked me, could I ride a horse? And I said, yeah, of course you can. Yeah, but I've been riding for 8 years out in the park with one of the Taff brothers, Bill Taff, right? There was Pat Taff, Toss Taff, and Bill Taff. And I went up the stables to work, and I rode out on the horse. They were hack horses. They were, you know, place where people go for a ride out in the park, and it was lovely.
Mm.
And you could. So I learned to ride very well out there, and then they asked me, could I ride a horse? But they sent me out to check out to Clane, to Lord Mount Charles.
Oh yeah.
Place, right?
On Slane Castle, was it?
Outside the grounds, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they put me up on this animal, a grey called Pegasus. And they said, right, I mounted up, checked the irons, did all the whole thing, rode out. And there was a fence in the middle of the field. It was about probably just a little bit lower than the table we're sitting at, right?
Yeah.
You're just high enough when you're, you need stuntmen. If you're going over bigger ones, you need. But they're the hedges across the fields.
Mm.
But you had to know how to jump. You had to know how to bring the horse. And I brought her and I said, it's pulling the head. She's pulling the head a little bit. Can you put a martingale on it just to keep the, right? You know?
Yeah.
So they did. They put her around, then stopped pulling the head. And then I went around. Then I took the fence, you know?
Yeah.
Took the jump and that.
Did you have to do a jump?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they wanted, yeah, because that was the reason.
Right.
Yeah, because I had to jump across on the scene I was doing.
Yeah.
There was a camera following all the way across, right?
Yeah.
It was one shot all the way up to the house.
Yeah.
And then they cut there. So I had to go, but I tell you, I did all that, right?
Yeah.
I came across over the things, and a frosty day, frosty morning, so the frost, and you couldn't do it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the marks will be in the frost, right? And they'd have to change or bring it and all that, right? They said, Gene, can you do it in one? I said, yeah, I do it right. As long as you do it in one. So anyway, I did it. Came across, right? Clear the fence, clear the next ditch. It's just ditches, not fences, ditches. And all up to the house, right?
Yeah.
And I got there. And then when I get there, they say, cut, right?
Yeah.
Thank God, right? Because when I tried to get off, I got cramp in my right leg. I couldn't get off the animal. I got that. Oh, no. Well, they said, it's all right. We'll just change the cut, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they say, can you just, when you're all right, right, we'll cut earlier of you just coming up to the house and then you can get off.
Yeah.
And so we did that. Well, yeah. That was fine. Yeah, but I loved that. I spent years up in at Ashtown Gates, Ashtown, the tin box company Ashtown, used to be at Ashtown.
Gates, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the stables were down there, and I loved it, yeah. A couple of years there, you know.
Because was he the director, Robert Young?
I can't remember.
He would have been famous for directing The Wicker Man with Christopher Lee and Edward Woodward,
I think so,
which was a great movie.
Was it? No, The Fantasist.
The Fantasist was Robert...
I think Cyril Cusack was supposed to be in it.
Christopher Cazenove was in it of Dynasty fame, wasn't he?
Christopher Cazenove. Cazenove, they call
him. He was an English actor.
And
Timothy Bottoms.
Our beloved, oh God.
Was Mick Lally was in
Mick
it?
Lally. Mick Lally, there was a difference between the director and Cyril.
Right.
And I don't know, I can't remember his name, but it wasn't what you mentioned.
Was John Cavanagh in it?
No, John Cavanagh, one of the detectives or something,
yeah,
was he?
Yeah.
I was playing this sort of good-for-nothing local fella, right, who just fancied the knickers off Moira Harris, who was a very attractive leading lady, but anyway, that's another matter. No, it's not even another matter. Nothing happened.
did she become Moira Sinise?
I don't know.
I was doing a little bit of research and she might have married Gary Sinise. Who was in Forrest Gump.
She was a cheeky little...
Was she really?
She's very attractive. Cheeky in the attractive sense, you know.
Yeah, I can only imagine female actresses. They're fairly wild. Because you did Taffin, and I know Alison Doody, she was in one of the Indiana Jones movies. And
I think Alison Doody had a crush on me when she was filming.
Oh, really?
She used to love seeing me in the morning when I came in, yeah. I don't think herself and Pierce got...
Did they not get out?
I don't know, but it didn't seem to me. You know, I think Pierce usually sort of, you know, and... anyway, I don't know, but I mean, I just got the impression that there wasn't exactly hearts flying around the place, you know.
Well, I saw her up in Dundrum there a couple of years ago, and she's aged very well.
Oh, she would. Great. She's beautiful.
Beautiful looking woman.
Yeah, I was doing that marble Madonna around the country while I was doing Taffin, yeah. And I was driving from Limerick to Wicklow at 6 o'clock in the morning to get to Wicklow for 10 o'clock when I was due. And getting from Limerick to Wicklow, and there were no motorways. That was long, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I used to hear into the car park in the morning, right on the gravel. Yeah, there you go. Jim's arrived. Yeah, you know. Yeah, that was. I was amazed. It was a great part. I loved it. But the one thing about it that I was very intimidated. I was sort of overawed by Pierce, right?
Yeah.
And I had so much I wanted to say to him, but you know, when you can't. Oh God, I'm doing the same with Pierce Brosnan, and you can't even speak.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I was very nice. I brought the two kids out to see him one day when I was shooting. Lovely. And he was lovely.
Yeah.
I went out to have lunch with himself and his family one day, but I couldn't. Then we actually went out. We finished at 2 o'clock in the morning doing a night shoot, and we went back to the pub in Wicklow Town, yes, which was the sort of office headquarters.
Yeah.
So it had license to open for, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, and the local sergeant, I think it was Vincent or Martin, he was great, right? And he did a little part in the movie as well, you know. But it was great. And Philip Healy, who played for Wicklow, was the gaffer in the pub.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, but it was great. But I couldn't, I melted when I was working with Pierce, I really did.
Yeah.
And I had so much that I wanted to say to him. I wanted to tell him, did you give that loan back to the London Council for heating your for heating your flat, for the heating in your flat, and then you use the money to go off to do the Mannions of America over in America. And I didn't. I could have said to him, kind of tell me now.
Yeah,
but I didn't do the Irish thing. I didn't. I just, you know. Well, I could have.
Yeah,
I could have got a job in James Bond if I'd done that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
I could have been a contender.
I could have been a contender.
I could have been somebody.
Couldn't we all?
I had to be happy.
Well, Taffin, that got him the Remington Steel gig, didn't it?
Well, he had the Remington Steel before.
He had that already, did he? Okay.
No, they were trying to negotiate for him to do James Bond because Mary Tyler Moore had him tied up.
That's right, he was tied to the contract.
And he had to say... He said, we had to sign on for another year before he was released, and then he got it.
That's right.
You know?
So I remember they shot an episode in Dublin, actually. Yeah. I remember that. And they were running around down by the Curzon Cinema, I think it was. Just off O'Connell Street there. Yeah, Abbey Street, that's a long time ago. Yeah.
Upper Abbey Street there, yeah. And just opposite the Adelphi there.
And you were in a Pink Panther movie.
Ah, yeah. Oh, look. That's the line I had in it.
Oh, look,
I was a French detective, right?
Yeah.
And the villain escapes outside from the train.
A helicopter, that's right.
And he goes to the loo. We let him go to the loo, right? And then he goes to the loo and he's not back. And next minute I look out the window of the train and Bobby Carriford, God rest him, I think, I don't know if he's dead yet. God, Bobby, I don't know. Forget it, that. I see a helicopter and I just turn to Bobby and say, look. And then, and then we're down to the loo to get your man, but he's gone out through the top.
To the roof, yeah.
That was all I had. Bobby and myself were going up and down. They said, first assistant came in, lads, would you mind staying on the train while we finish off all these shots instead of driving you all the way back to Kingsbridge and all that? And you have the bar. And you have the restaurant, and you have whatever you like, you know. And Bobby said, "You're not doing it." And I'm, and the two of us sat there, and we had the best of steak and a glass of wine, and, you know, and maybe another glass of wine. And we were quite happy.
As you do.
And then we arrive at the platform, so getting off at Houston now it is. And there's a fellow with the money, right?
Yeah.
And this is 70s, early 70s.
Yeah.
I think it's 72 or something. Yeah. And, you know, and next thing he takes out the money, you know, and he hands us the money. It was 400 for the day.
Yeah, that's a lot of money back then.
Then?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. For just going up saying, look, right, you know, and getting the wine and the steak, great, you know.
Yeah.
People think this happens all the time. Yeah, I'd love to say it does. No, I really don't. No, you just meet people like Johnny Boyle and you have drink all day. You know?
That's it. Well, it's not about the drink, it's about the conversation, you know.
Absolutely. But yeah, the conversation wouldn't be half good now without the drink. Right?
Well, it does help.
Anyway, no, we're not really drinking at all. This is all theatre.
It is. And like, I suppose going back to like Mosny, and you were working in Butlins. Like, what?
I went to Brendan Smith's Academy in Georgia Street, Acting Academy, a famous one. And Mike Murphy, remember our Mike Murphy television?
Yeah.
He went there. Eamon Morrissey, a student there. And there were a couple of people who went to Brendan Smith. But he did, he had the Dublin Repertory Company, Brendan Smith. And he picked some students sort of out of the academy that he, you know, thought would, you know. So he picked me to be, to go for a part.
Yeah.
And the part was for a boxer, right? Young boxer, say, 17, 18. And this was 1959, 1960. So I was 15.
Yeah.
And the auditions, there was only another actor on myself, but he had a very much a boxer's nose.
Yeah.
Right? And he's looking mine, very much a Jewish, and all due respects, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not a boxer's nose, right? And so I went up, so he got the part, right?
Yeah.
And the stage manager, stage director was sitting there and I'm sitting down beside her. And I'm watching your man getting the part. He says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm not doing that." And I was up for that part. He says, "Okay, you're my ASM, assistant stage manager." So she said, "Sit down, every time they mentioned a thing like a table, a knife, a spoon, or anything, write it down, props, right? So I started. I started ASM, assistant stage manager, and then I started writing down everything they said, right?
Yeah.
And what type of plane did you arrive in on, darling? And he said, an Aer Lingus Viscount. An Aer Lingus Viscount. It's a prop. Right? Yeah. And no, we don't need one of those. And so that's when I went down. Learned stage management, learned to be there before anybody else, learned punctuality, learned how some actors can be a bit belligerent and a bit, right?
Difficult.
Difficult. And some are so good, right? Mm. And understand what you have to do. And because always the best actors were always the nice ones, right?
Yeah.
The ones who weren't so, right, had wanted to show or something, but whatever, insecurity.
Yeah.
But then I learned how to build sets, light them. And then I started acting down there as well.
Yeah.
And then I became stage director.
Yeah.
And working with people like Aidan Grinnell, God rest him, Barry Casson, God rest him. They were famous, lovely men.
Yeah.
In that era, right? And they taught me an awful lot. May McFall, God rest him. Every time I mention somebody, I follow up with God rest them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it shows
the
era that I went through. I'll talk to you about that. I'll talk to you about that in a minute. But yeah, that's what I learned. And I learned everything all the way through Mosny, which is great. There's none of that anymore. There's no breeding ground. There's no training ground.
There doesn't seem to be.
Some actors, they're going into TV series. They can their voice and the level of their voice barely reaches the mic overhead. And it's only 6 inches overhead.
Yeah.
Well, they're mumbling in a way, trying to be real. You know,
yeah,
you're going to do that. You
but that's something you learn on stage, is to project.
As an actor, you got to project. You got to let people hear you.
Yeah,
and the microphone's got to hear you as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, don't try to be too real. You got to be a little bit slightly exaggerated. Be a character. Put energy into your character. Move the space on the screen.
Right? Yeah,
it's a very small screen. You've got to really move something in it.
Yeah.
And the strength of your character has got to come across.
Yeah.
But it's coming across in monotone. And the problem is that in a soap, we do something like 4 days filming a week, and you do something like 14 scenes a day.
Nice, okay.
Now, the director doesn't have an awful lot of time to start directing you as to moods and that and that. You've got to create that when you go in, and really they've got to be told, some of the actors, they need to be told when they're going, you've got to create this.
Yeah.
It's up to you to create it and be alert to the situation, to the dialogue, to the script, right?
Yeah.
Don't just deliver the script like you're reading it at rehearsals, you know. But that's probably the training all down through the years. So going through variety as well, but I did variety.
Yeah.
I sort of, the transition from legit to variety, television, the whole lot. But variety is a big learner.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to learn. When you're working with Maureen Potter, Danny Cummins, during those right years, you knew how to talk.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
How to say it, you know.
Yeah.
And reach the back of the gods. Right?
Yeah.
And that's learning all the time. If you don't stop learning, Johnny, you have to keep learning. You know?
Well, I think you have to maintain a sense of curiosity as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, otherwise you'll just plateau, and I suppose you become stale to a degree. You know,
that's where the learning comes in. You're curious. You want to know how to do this. Do this better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
you got to watch other. You watch senior actors who've gone through it and know what they're doing.
Yeah,
and the reason they have a sort of name or a reputation is because look at them, and then you'll. You know?
Yeah. I saw Maureen Potter in June and the Peacock.
In the gate.
And
Donald McCann,
Captain Boyle, and
John Kavanagh.
I bumped into John Kavanagh on the bus a few times. Very nice man.
Yeah.
You know, very, very nice man. And I saw Cillian Murphy play young Johnny Boyle in a production with Michael Gambon, and John Kavanagh was playing Joxer.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful to have seen, you know, that my dad took me to the theatre. He took me to Borstal Boy with Neil Tobin as well, because I mean he owned that role.
Well, yeah.
Were you in a production with Tobin?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
really.
1967. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I played I was in the first production in the Army. Played a character called Knowles, and Eamon Morrissey played Tulips, and then Tulips, Eamon dropped down, they asked me would I play Tulips, so I played Tulips. Oh yeah, we toured all around Ireland, and I remember France as well, Paris.
Yeah.
And Otto Bean, yeah. And then Mick Hennessy took over from Tobin.
Right.
As a band. But Liam Tobin, he was Bean.
Yeah.
On stage. Some lovely timing.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. You look at him and you listen and you learn. And that's how you develop your timing. You know, I used to watch Danny Cummins on stage and he'd do little solo vignettes, right? On stage, right? Yeah. Like the night keeper at a factory or anything like that. And he'd be sitting around the fire and he'd start telling a story. But his timing, you know, and his absolute sincerity to the words and everything.
Yeah.
Great. Danny was great, you know?
Yeah.
And Maureen, of course, for the brash comedy.
Yeah.
You know, and she was great. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Ah, great. They were great, you know?
So, how did you... I suppose moving from theatre, I mean, you've had a lot of experience in theatre, musicals as well. You're a Jesus Christ superstar, and
The first musical I did was The Sound of Music. Yeah,
yeah.
I played Ralph, the telegraph boy. Yeah,
yeah.
And that was the one that Ray McAnally was in, and that's where I met my first wife Barbara. She was in Tolkarrow when she was only a child.
Yeah.
But then I met her. We were working together in the Gaiety between Gales of Laughter, the Summer Review, and the pantomimes, and all that. That was from 1968 to 1975. Right. Yeah.
But Tolkarrow was what, 64 to 68?
I started recording that in 1963, and I left it in 1968, the beginning of 1968 season.
Okay. Yeah. But Brenda Fricker was in that as well.
Brenda played my girlfriend in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she's lovely. Yeah, she's great. Yeah. I haven't seen her for years.
Okay, folks, so there's part one of the Jim Bartley interview. I had a great time talking to Jim. I will try and release part two in a week's time. As you could hear on that podcast, I had a slight nervous tick where I kept saying, yeah. I'll try not to do that again. In my previous podcast, I kept saying, you know what I mean? So I'm learning as I go, and I will try to eliminate any more nervous ticks on any of my following podcasts. I hope you enjoyed this first part. It was a great insight into the rare old times. I do like talking to the older generation about Dublin. I grew up in the late 70s and through the 80s, and it was a very different city to what it is now. So I do like reminiscing about the theatre and music and all those kind of things. So tune in next week and I'll give you part two where myself and Jim talk about Fair City and a variety of things that have happened later in his life since he started in TV. So see you soon, folks. Bye.